Welcome back to the second hour of the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show right here in beautiful Tucson, Arizona. And I will say that with the utmost of respect because it is absolutely gorgeous out there right now. You know, and I have the weather station on mute and I read and see that stuff. It almost makes me want to throw up. I am so glad I live in Tucson this morning. Anyway, welcome to the Simmons Car Care Show. I'm Jerry Simmons, your host. Along with me is Jim Mooney, owner of Frontier Towing, for all of your towing needs. Been there and towed that. Literally been there and towed that. Everything, including a rhinoceros for the Reed Park Zoo. Anyway, good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning, everybody out there in cyberspace. I really appreciate it. I want to thank Scott from Parker Automotive for coming on. It was super great this morning.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Scott. We really appreciate it. Remember, folks, it's Super Safe Saturday back again. Second to go around this morning. That means move over, slow down. Move over for the potholes. I guess that's what the point was. There are so many potholes over. I guess you got to move over for them. But then you got to watch to make sure you're not going to run into a curb. So really pay attention to the roadways out there today. So move over for the pothole day, I guess is what we're going to call this one. Watch out for the dog walkers and the bicyclists, too, while you're out there. They're everywhere. They are on the road just as well. Dodging the potholes just as much as you are. Because if you hit a pothole with a bicyclist, you might have a real tough time. That could throw you for a loop. So I'm sure they don't want to hit them either.
You'd have to get a GPS to find your bicycle.
Yeah, you never know. You could lose a whole bicycle and you in the pothole. So be careful out there. if you're going to do St. Patty's Day tomorrow, we talked about this earlier, and you're going to do the pub crawl. If you're going to do the pub crawl, go ahead and get yourself a ride back and forth. Or like Jerry said, do the pub crawl from your own home. That's probably the best way to do it. But that means, to follow up with that, that means no drinking and driving, no texting and driving, no watching TikTok. And, you know, I guess if you're on the pub crawl and you want to upload your videos, that might be kind of interesting. But as long as you're not driving, we're good with that. So don't do that. You're working on your car, and you're going to do just a little bit of work today, just a little bit of maintenance today to help it out, which is probably a good thing. That's Scott's recommendation, so we're good with that. If you want to do a little bit of work, do it safely. That means put the jack stands down if you're jacking the car up. But that means put them down and put them underneath the car, folks. Don't just put them down on the ground. When you jack the car up, put the jack stands under the car and lower the car on the jack stand. In case that wasn't, somebody thought, oh, I put them right next to the car. No, that doesn't count. You can't, we got to go all the way with this. You got to get them under the car and get them in the right spots. If you don't know where to put your jack stands, you need to figure it out because you don't want to damage your car or have the thing fall off. So check, make sure.
That's right.
If you don't know, just take it to Jerry or Scott or Brian and let them do it. If you don't know what to do, you know, stay in your own wheelhouse, right? Stay with what you're good at.
Right.
Don't take on tasks if you don't know what to do, or get somebody who does if you want. Use your hood prop. Use your hood prop if you get the car, even if you do know what to do, because that falling on your head is a tough one. Chalk your wheels so the thing doesn't roll away. And folks, you'd be surprised how easy cars can roll. You think it won't, but they roll pretty darn easily sometimes, especially when you least expect it. Put your keys in your pocket so in case you lock your doors, you got a way to get back in. Disconnect your battery if you're working on your electrical so you don't short yourself out. Don't keep your hands away and long shirts away from rotating fans. Put your safety glasses on. Do that first. I should have said that first.
Keep your hair
That's right. Don't stand in front of the car when it's running. That's Jerry's tip. Or stand behind it. That's my backup caveat. Behind the car, don't back up, right? Put your gloves on if you're working on your cars. Also, Jerry's giving away tickets this hour to the Speedway. It's the O'Reilly 100. And we'll give a shout-out to O'Reilly Chevrolet this morning. March 18th of this year, March 18th, 2024, is their 100th anniversary. 100 years. That's a long time, folks. If you think it's tough being in business for a couple of years, try it for 100 years. I got to give them credit. That's a pretty good haul. That's a really good haul.
That's hanging in there.
That's hanging in
it's
there.
It's funny. Nobody over there looks 100. Nobody over there looks 100.
Yes, that's right. You go over there.
Good looking place.
Good look. Yeah, go over there and see. You know what? I tell you what. You got a problem. Go over there and see the girl in the service department whose name is Diana Lucero. Tell her the guy from Frontier sent you over there. You got a problem with O'Reilly Chevrolet. Go over see Diana Lucero. She's our girl over there at O'Reilly Chevrolet in the service department. Go over there and tell her you heard us on the radio and you stopped by just to say hi. She will appreciate that. We'll get her name out.
And
there,
tell her so. She does not look to be 100 years old.
She does not look anywhere near 100. She looks about 27.
That's what I'm saying. That's fair. Congratulations.
So,
100 years?
100,
that's a long time.
That's a long time. Well, they're doing the Celebrity 100 race this weekend, right? Aren't they sponsoring the race this weekend?
Yeah, they're sponsoring that race.
That's
it's
right.
The O'Reilly Chevy 100.
That's right.
O'Reilly Chevy 100, yeah. That's pretty cool. Okay, but don't forget, phone number is 527-19-1490. We still have a couple of tickets. We may have more than that. I haven't heard yet. But we still got two tickets for callers 1 and 2 on 719-1490. Prefix is 520. And we'll get that going. Okay. Now, where are you at? Did you get on with your super safe Saturday and Sunday?
I finished the whole thing. And Sunday.
Okay.
That's right. Okay. I did the whole thing.
I did a bunch of research on some stuff. And I'm trying to figure out. I only have an hour. Well, don't even have an hour now. But energy lost.
Didn't talk too much.
I thought this was pretty cool. Energy lost 68% to 72% engine lose. 46% is from parasite losses. 3.5% from drivetrain losses. 0 to 2% from auxiliary electricity use. 75.84% of original energy is lost. 16 to 25% of original energy goes to the wheels. That's how much of energy you lose out of a gallon of gas. Now, you take it on into the EVs. EV uses one half of the energy that a gas-powered vehicle does. Okay? So that I just thought that was kind of fascinating. I won't bore you with it's not boring, it just takes too long, or the rest of the article on that. But if you want to see, check your EVs to see what is available on the cars, used cars, you got a $4,000 or 30% of the sales value you need, and that's only used cars, only used electric vehicles. You have to research to find out if you qualify, if that car qualifies, because the rules change in 2024. Tax credits changed in 2024. You want to go to EPA, has a list of used EVs for sale. I read that about five times. And plug-in hybrid EVs. So, you know, there it is. But when you get ready to do that, do your homework on them. You do your homework on any car. If you're going to go buy, I don't care what you buy, do your homework. Due diligence. Do the math. And then buy one because, you know, electric vehicles are here to stay. We know that. I mean, they started in 1809 or something like that in England. But the at that time, gas was like a nickel a gallon or something. And the top speed on that thing then was 35 miles an hour. But the road wouldn't take the top speed, I guess. But he didn't really have enough charging, I guess. Battery life and stuff was a problem then also. Anyway, they improved a long way. So you're going to be handling that. We've got to go back now and let's see. What else? Where are we at, Jim? All right, I'm following this thing. I've got it. There are so many notes here, and I'm trying to get through it as soon as possible so we can get the real stuff. All right, we covered torque the first hour. Go ahead, Jim.
No, you're talking about energy now, loss from through the vehicle.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's a really interesting concept, Jerry. You know, we never think about it, you know, how much power it actually takes to drive a vehicle. You know, you put the gas in the car and that car starts up and we talk about, you know, oh, it makes 400 horsepower, you know, which is pretty amazing today, or especially it makes a lot of horsepower, it makes 750 horsepower. But, you know, how much actually gets the road wheel, you know? It used to be, folks, back in the 70s, in the 60s, they measured it at the flywheel, right? They measured the horsepower right at the back of the motor. They don't anymore. They actually measured it at the road. So 400 horsepower is supposed to be what you get on the ground through all the losses of energy that go through the transmission and the drivetrain, plus accessories. So it's kind of interesting. But there's still other factors that go into play, you know, grades of roads. Conditions of road probably are the worst draw on power. Believe it or not, folks, bad roads eat up power from a car. Smooth roads have a significant reduction in friction of sort of tire and tire wear and will make your mileage go up. I know politicians don't want to hear this because they think a good road is one that is one continuous pothole. So we go from one to the other, to the other, to the other.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey.
Is there still tickets for tonight?
What?
Is there still tickets for tonight?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
Oh, I just wondered if there was a ticket giveaway. I forgot to ask you at the beginning of the show.
Yes, there's been one for the first hour and the second hour. If that's the case, I've got four tickets left.
Tickets left. Thank you,
give
sir.
Give away four.
Thank you.
All right, go ahead, Jim.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no problem. So nobody wants to hear about the fact that a bad road increases friction on a car and thereby, you know, making the car drive slower or taking more energy to propel it down the road, which costs more fuel. And I don't care if it's a gas car, an electric car, a hybrid car, a CNG car. It's about physics and gravity and inertia. When it takes more power to drive the car, it doesn't matter what your source is, it still takes more power. So good roads, and we say this all the time for the obvious points of the because we started on the pothole thing, you know, potholes do a lot of damage, but they cause a lot of issues at the same time. But when a road is smooth and straight, your car will actually perform better. And even though those guys go out of the way to test them through the worst conditions they can, they don't design them to drive on really crummy roads. They design them to work on pretty nice roads. That's how they're built. And just a crummy road is what we get into. Also, road conditions. Water is also another condition. If you look at trains, trains run on rails, right? They're solid steel. There is probably the least amount of friction that exists on a rail on a train. But they also are on a track. They can't go anywhere, so to speak. But if you look at a bad road, the bad roads have a tendency to rob us. Also, the bad road with the pothole has a tendency to cause accidents. Just like just like bad roads in general. Poor road conditions cause accidents. The continuous pothole causes you to not make contact with the road all the time. And when that, folks, I can, from my experience, cars crash because of poor driving and road conditions, right? If you're not paying attention, you're going to crash. But if you're driving too fast for the road, or the tire is not making contact with the road because the road condition is poor and the wheel is going up and down and there's a slight air gap between your tire and the road, you're not going to stop. It's very simple. When the tire doesn't touch the road, there's no stopping. That little air gap in there means that car is sailing away just as fast as it can. So all those things come into play when you're talking about driving on the car. And just like Jerry said, friction on the road, loss of energy through the road, crashes on the road, all because, the road wasn't in the best shape. Also, debris on the road, sand on the road. It's the other reason why we speak frequently in this town about water running across the road. Since it doesn't happen a lot, but this year probably got a little bit, Water running across the road creates a no friction environment, so the car washes away. And I don't care how much horsepower you got or how fast you think you're going to drive. When the tire is lifted from the roadway and there's no contact, you now have a boat and you're floating down the river. That's why they put those signs up: don't cross the road. They don't mean don't cross the road unless you think you're smarter than the road. And I put the sign up, but it doesn't. That's just a suggestion. It doesn't apply to me. I know better. I looked at the suggestions, thought about the suggestions. I didn't want to take that suggestion. I like speed limits. They're only a suggestion until you get a ticket. Then you're just like, oh, I guess I should have looked at that speed limit sign because that wasn't really a good suggestion. I should have followed that suggestion. Same with the road, the crossing signs in the roadway full of water. So, anyway, the point is, as Jerry was speaking, bad roads leads to loss of power and loss of efficiency in your engine, which costs fuel mileage. And at $3.35 or $4 a gallon, whatever it is these days, whatever number, whatever yo-yo string they've got the gas price on, it's expensive. You got to do everything you can to minimize that. I think that's where I was going with that, Jerry. I hope that's where you were going with that.
Yep. Anytime you drive, anything you can do when you've got a vehicle that's got over 15, 16,000 moving parts at it, anything you can do for an oil change, alignments, tire pressure especially, you do to help you increase. But remember what I said in the first hour. Number one cause of jackrabbit starts is your right foot. Ryan Fuller nailed it from the automotive specialist. All in favor of fuel economy, good fuel economy, raise your right foot. And that is realistic. If you do that, you will save fuel. Guarantee it. Jackrabbit start, I don't care how fast Jim takes off from a stop sign. I can outrun those big trucks anyway in a go-kart, but as far as driving away from the corners. But in all seriousness, you don't need to be the first cross. You look before you take off because Jim's been to a lot of wrecks where people just bother. They just assume the lights have all the construction to block the lanes of traffic. When it changes, all the other roads are blocked off just for you. That's a bunch of bull. You take that extra time to look and make sure the traffic is not coming. I have saved my rear end probably a dozen times by doing that because that other vehicle, I don't know who they were talking to or what la-la land they were coming from or what road they thought they were on, but all I know is they come right across in front of me. Had I been the first to leave the line, I would have collected them. So people like to, you remember, yellow lights mean accelerate. so that you don't get the red one. Remember that? And you need to think about that before you actually do it. Because I'm sure Jim's got a few little wrecks that he's cleared out of intersections where that's exactly what happened, you know. And it's amazing. These tow truck drivers, Frontier Towing, that hauls a bunch of them around Tucson, they can probably tell you pretty much just because of the scenario and what they see when they get to a crash, what probably caused it.
It's funny you say that, Jerry. It's funny you say that. I've been to plenty of crashes in my days, you know, and we'll see cars or vehic or trucks or whatever in the middle of the road, and you just are befuddled by how the car wound up where it was at. You're looking at the car and the direction and another car and it doesn't make any sense. The cars are far apart and they're turned different ways, and you're trying to figure out which direction they were headed from. But it can speed and velocity have a lot to do with how vehicles move, and design today, cars are designed to shield the passenger, so they do their best to bounce off each other, kind of like bumper cars. But if you think that running just put this out there. I know, I see it 1,000 times a day. You know, people, you know, see the yellow light and they mash the gas. First off, I don't know if you guys know this, if folks know this. Not all yellow lights are constructed the same. There is a specific time frame for which a light is supposed to be yellow, but it doesn't always work that way. Believe it or not, some are shorter and some are longer. Why? Couldn't tell you. But some of them are actually have a second or two less, and some of them have a second or two more than what the standard is. So if you think that you're going to hit the yellow and make it before the red, sometimes ain't the case. You ain't going to make it. Now, if there's two people that both think that they're going to hit the yellow, and this is where the crash comes in, I can make the yellow, and now it's red, and I'm in the middle of the intersection when it's red, and the other guy is going through because he saw the red light, and he's anticipating it turning green. So you're both in the intersection at the same time. That's when the crash occurs. So, you know, I know we're all in hurries. Trust me, I get it. I mean, we try to get there as quick as we can. But, you know, err on the side of caution and just, if I see the light yellow, maybe I should just slow down. I mean, we all know it. We drive every day, folks. We see the light. It's green for a minute. You know that it's going to go red. You're not going to make it. You're too far away. You're not going to make it. You're gonna have to slow down. You're going to have to stop. If you think you're going to make the green light that's been green for a minute or a minute and a half, if you're going to make that thing, the likelihood of you making it is going to be nearly impossible. We all know that. This is not anything new. We just sometimes forget because, you know, because we like to gamble.
Remember?
No, just don't do it. Don't do it.
Remember the lights that had the timers on them and they were timed with the camera? You get ready to go through. Coming down Speedway in Wilmot yesterday, about 3:30 in the afternoon, I stopped because the light was red. I said, "Okay, I'm first through it because I don't even entertain the thought of speeding down any place anymore because there's somebody always about 20 miles an hour faster than me anyway. So why rush it? Wilmot and Speedway." The light changed, and I'm sitting there. Remember, I'm the guy that I'm not going to be the first one across. When the light was red, there was 2, 4, 5 vehicles that went through when the light was red, and they were using both lanes to turn left. There were 5 vehicles going through. The light was already green and the traffic was moving, but very slow, allowed those people to get out of the middle of the intersection. Okay? That'll get you. The other one is the ones where you're going in. Let's just use Wilmot. You're coming, you're going south on Wilmot, and you're going to get on Speedway, so you got that little entrance ramp. A little entrance ramp where you're supposed to be able to see three directions at the same time, forward, backwards, and a tight right. The guy behind you has the same problem, except he's got to look, watch the front, watch the traffic, watch the one coming from the left side, and make sure he don't hit you in the butt, because your decision is probably different than his decision when he can go. I was going to ask Jim one of these days if he ever could come up with a number on how many bumpers. I mean, it's not that big of a deal, but it's still on these cars, a 3-mile-an-hour crash on the front end of one of these cars. You know, I'd have to ask Spectrum. Oh, yeah, Spectrum. I'd have to ask Spectrum, Ina Road Auto Collision Center at 4425 West Ina Road. Phone number 520-744-4454. That's for your body work need, paint jobs and stuff over at Spectrum. But I'd have to ask Spectrum about how much damage is done by a 3-mile-an-hour rear-end collision, especially with a vehicle that has all the bags, the airbags and stuff like that. Do you know, Jim, that I heard the number one time, and I like to faint it. It is really expensive.
I've seen cars totaled by rear-end collisions. So you got to remember this. If you collide with the rear of a vehicle, and your front's going to be damaged. So there's a couple of things that come into play here. So at 5 miles an hour, if somebody hits, depending on the vehicles, right? So if you have trucks versus cars or car to car, there's the front bumper, the front, which folks, when you hit the front of a new car, there's little clips that hold the bumper on it, and they break. They all break. They always break. Part of the way they work, they just snap off. Okay. By the way, you don't buy the clips; you got to buy the whole new front bumper. So that, with today's sonars and today's cameras on the front, which we're now going to require recalibration, there's a lot of damage that occurs, and a lot of it can't be seen. That's why they have to do teardown. The reverse for the rear of the other car is if it's an older car. Let's say it's a 20-year-old car, you know, maybe an 05, and you collide with it, it's very possible that, A, the parts aren't available for it, 2, the parts that are on it are old and brittle and just shatter, or the paint is old and fractures, like, you know, you get the all the cracks in it, and the paint just starts coming off because of the age. So now you have a bumper cover, a bumper reinforcement, and bumper attachment points, plus quarter panels that are all damaged because of the age of the vehicle. And it causes and now you have a vehicle that could be totaled out because maybe it's, you know, the older vehicle, although in really good condition, could have a value of, you know, maybe $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000, and the repair to get it back to where it was exceeds that, because part replacement is extremely difficult to get, plus paint matching is extremely difficult to do on a 20-year-old car, and you get to marry everything back together. So you get to take everything off and put the car back together and make it look like it was before. And I've seen insurance companies actually not want to take on that burden. They're just like, you know what, we're going to total the car, but it doesn't look that bad. Yeah, but it's too bad for us, and they send it down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about vehicle collisions, every scenario is different. I know the guy will come out and go, oh, it's only going to take this much. Maybe not. you know, and it,
right.
it can be very, very challenging. And like I said, Javier, if you had Javier on here, he could tell you all the stories about every scenario that he had and the offender and a bumper cover and a headlight assembly, you know, that's now he's in $4,000 land. And you're just like, mm-hmm. How could it be so much? Well, that's just the way it is. The headlight assembly is, you know, $1,500 and the bumper cover is $1,200. You know, wait, it shifted the front, the reinforcement on the front. Now the frame horn is pushed, so I got to straighten that out. Oh, by the way, because that's what it's designed to do, so it absorbs energy. The radiator and the AC condenser are now out of alignment. Oh, heaven forbid you have a turbo on your car, and now the air cooler is out of alignment or cracked. You know, determining if a radiator leaks, that's easy. You got water in it, you tighten it up. You know, if water leaks out of it, it's leaking, right? AC condenser, a little more challenging. You got to pressure it up with something like nitrogen. You pressure it up, and you can look for the leak. An intercooler on a turbo, that's not so easy to figure out. That's a real, real tough one because you're talking about 5 or 6 PSI on for the most part. You're talking about it leaking in an area. You can't see it. It only goes when the car runs, and when it's under boost. So you won't necessarily see if an air or an intercooler is leaking. Really hard to find out. Oh, I'll just inject air or smoke in there. Oh, now I get inject smoke into my engine. There's vacuum machines that they put those underneath and pull a vacuum down. Well, I don't have a vacuum machine to pull down a vacuum on an intercooler. It's got a 2-inch line on it. You got to have it pulled down. Radiator guys might do it, but you just got to suck it down and hold vacuum to see if it leaks or put it under pressure to see if it leaks. Yeah, those are really challenging things to figure out, and you don't figure them out in one day, and you don't figure them out sometimes just by looking at them. I mean, sure, it's easy to tell if there's a scratch on the fender, but it's internal damage can be very difficult to figure out. And like the guys at the body shop, mm-hmm. I give them credit because there are days when I'm just like, how the heck did you guys, where, how is that? Like, well, here's, see, this doesn't align here. This doesn't go there. See, this is off. And we're not talking about just overall aesthetic appearance of the vehicle. We're talking about safety. If I don't put it back together right, the car has a problem, during another collision, if the vehicle's compromised because I didn't do my job right, well, then I'm on the hook. So those guys get really, really excited about making sure that thing goes back together right. Just like Scott and Jerry were talking about the oil, the drain plug in the oil pan. Yeah, don't get up there with a wind wrench. Never heard that term in a long time. Or today it's electric impact, you know. You do not need to use electric impacts or impact guns at all on oil drain plugs. But people do it, you know. And just like Scott said, you're now buying an oil pan, you know, because it's leaking. Great. The guy put it in there, you know, and zipped it in there and broke it off or stripped it out. So now you have a problem. And that's the kind of things that when you go to a body shop, those guys have to look for. And I know that you want your car back in 15 seconds because, well, it wasn't your fault that you got in a crash. It wasn't your fault that the sign jumped out in front of you. I know all these things. I've been to the wreck sites. I've had people explain their situation to me to justify why it wasn't their fault. And I was like, I'm just here to tow the car. I'm not judging you. I'm not the jury. I'm here to get the car off the road. It's okay. If it was your fault, okay. If it wasn't your fault, okay. You don't need to justify it to me. But I'm just here to move the car out of the way. So, you know, and when you're at the body shop, you're trying to explain to the guy how it wasn't your fault and how fast you need the car back, and he's like, hey, slow down, slow your roll for a second, folks. Let me get this apart so I can tell you what we really need to take care of. So, and it's challenging for those guys sometimes. And like I said, go up and see Javier. Walk up to his shop and have him walk you through the process. And then you'll go out, you know, after you get done mind-numbing, you'll be like, oh, geez, I didn't realize it was quite that involved. So,
The other option you have is when you have a crash like this and you're looking for a vehicle, you can go to lensautobrokerage.com. Go to the website. They've got a good website. You got everything inventory listed over there. And also, if you're looking for an RV, desertrv.com. And you can find specialized in toy haulers, desertrv.com. They've got just, and all of it is online. So go to Lens Auto Brokerage for your cars and 4x4s and Jeeps and minivans and foreign domestic, 2101 North Stone Avenue, 628-7500, 628-7500. Prefix is 520, of course. And they're open this morning. I think you open at 9 o'clock and you're open like till 4:30. They'll open. They'll stay open as long as you're in there buying a car. I'll know that for sure. And also, before I forget it, on the second hour, Simmons Drive Chefs and Garage, 520-884-0217, are looking for a drive shaft helper in the drive shaft department and a garage automotive technician. Phone number is 520-884-0217. These are our immediate openings, by the way. They had a guy that, a gentleman, I should say, that had a little heart issue over there. So we need a technician like now at Simmons. Give Wade a call, 520-884-0217, or just drop in and talk to Wade at Simmons 4x4 anytime between 8 and 5, Monday through Friday. We do not open on the weekend, so this is a non-working weekend. We don't work mechanics on a weekend or drive shaft division on a weekend. Because I'm a firm believer and people actually need to have some time with their families. And that's normally a weekend thing like we used to in the olden days. And I found out it's better to have a fresh technician come in on a Monday than one of us that worked on Saturday and stressed out and trying to get the job done Saturday night and worked all the way up. And then he didn't even get home till after dark. So, no, we're not going to do that. 884-0217, that is for the technician, garage technician, and a drive shaft helper. Drive shaft helper, this be trained technician. If you have some experience, it don't make any difference how much it is. We'll be happy to talk to you on that. And don't forget, 520-719-1490, we've got tickets to the racetrack. Tickets, I think we probably got four of them, to the O'Reilly Chevy 100. That's the Thunder Trucks, the Pro Stocks, the Hobby Stocks. It's a good lineup. I'm familiar with these different ones. And it's at Tucson Speedway. Huh?
Three sets. We've got three sets. Gave away a set already, so.
Yeah, we got one for Jim buddy, for Jim. His last game starts with an A.
But this is going to be a good race. The weather's going to be perfect. It's going to be a good race. The weather's going to be perfect. So, you know, get online and get these things. These things they're worth about $80 a piece. So the family four-pack is for real. So go ahead and get that. And on the I must be brain dead today. I'm following this stuff.
And
there's a couple
fine.
Of things the guy said earlier. One is tire size. Tire size. And you think that a tire, if it has the same numbers on the side of it, the circumference is exactly the same. I'm here to tell you it's not. The only way you can buy them on some of these cars is you have to take a tape with you and tape the circumference of this tire on all four tires to make sure they're within, I think it's 4%, 5%. They have to be the same size because when you put them on the ground, the different size tires, I've seen them, I pulled them off the rack where it was pulling hard to the right.
And I walked out, and we had it on the rack, and they're getting ready to check it out. And I said, why don't you put the right side tire, make sure it's the same size as the left? I can look at a wall with a picture hanging on it and tell you if it's a quarter of an inch off, and I don't care how big it is. And I've been able to do that all my life, and same way on tires. I can look at two tires on the front end of a vehicle from a distance and tell you which one's the biggest, which one's the smallest. And this thing had been to three places to try to find out why it was pulling to the right-hand side. Everybody checked the tire pressures. Tire pressures were exact. The number on the side of the tire was matching the number on the other side of the tire. What they forgot to do is the basics. Measure the circumference. If you've been doing this crap for 50 years like we have, you know that. But that comes from being there, done that, and most of the time, it's happened to me. So it's just, all tires are not the same size. Now, I'm going to switch this over to Jim. And
all tires are not the same.
Mainly because on the bigger tires that he sees and what he sees on the road, because the tire sizes are not the same. Go for it, big guy.
Well, tire sizes are not the same. You know what? And folks, there's a discrepancy among manufacturers. I mean, it's really close, but manufacturers have variances. Lot sizes have variances. Just like if you buy tile or paint, you know, or fabric. If you buy fabric, there's a lot, you know, and that lot came out a certain color. The next lot might be close, but it's not the same. Just saying. So with tires, it's best if you can stick with the same type, the same tire brand all the way around. If you can't, at least keep them the same on the axle. And so, because it's really critical, that at least that'll have the front or the back the same. If you're running duals, it's very critical that, I know people don't want to hear this, change them at the same time. I know, it's hard. You know, there's two times the money. But your tire wear will greatly appreciate it. So if you have a tire, for example, that you got duals on the back of your truck and you've worn them down halfway or three-quarters of the way or a quarter of the way, and you hit a pothole and you clip the one and the outside tire goes flat, or you drive over a nail and the inside tire goes flat, right? And you're looking at it going, oh, that one's still good, so I'll just put another one on the inside, right? Or I'll put one on the outside, whichever. So you have two different tires with two different sizes that are two different sizes. And Jerry made this point really good. You can measure those two tires, and they're going to be different. They're going to be different circumferences, and they're going to be different heights. Now, this is the craziest thing on the planet, and I didn't understand this till the tire guy explained it to me. Uneven tires that matched in duals wear out at a lesser rate. Now, so the tire that's the smaller or the more worn, right? So you put the brand new tire on the inside, and you put the worn out, the used tire on the outside. That outside tire will wear off faster than the inside tire. And you're sitting there thinking, well, how can that possibly be? It can't. How can it wear off faster? Well, the reason why is because, and this makes no sense. It's really hard to wrap your head around this. The tires are bolted together. They're turning at the same speed. They turn in the same direction. They go down the road on the same road. But because the tire that is smaller will have less load on it. There's going to be more load on the taller tire and less load on the shorter tire. Just the way it works. That tire will wear out faster because it will actually scrub along the asphalt. The asphalt now becomes like a sanding disc. It will actually scrub that off, and you will actually wear it down substantially faster than the new tire. I know it sounds crazy. How can it possibly be that way? It works because of the way the tire heats and the way the movement of the tire, if it's expansion and contraction during their normal running, that old tire or the worn tire that you put next to a new tire on a set of duals will always wear out faster. You wouldn't think that would be the case. It happens all the time. So, and then
oh,
and also
sure
that
is.
Puts an increased load on the on your new tire. So if you're changing duals, same manufacturer, same new tire, same one. Now you can try and match them up. You know, like say you have one that's a used one, and you can try and match up against another used one, and that might work okay. But you're always going to get uneven tire wear, and then you're going to see uneven tire wear across the axle. So for example, let's say you're doing a set of duals, and this even happens on single wheels. It's not so quite so noticeable. You have a set of duals on your truck, right? And they're and for some reason you have a failure, you know, and the tires wear out, and you're 3/4 of the way the tires, right? And you rupture the tire, or it goes flat. Who knows? The thing goes flat, and it gets a nail. You don't know it, and the tire goes flat, and you're like, okay, I listened to Jerry's advice. I listened to Jim's advice. We're going to put a new set of duals on one side. Now the truck is actually going to sit lopsided because the one side has old tires, one set of duals is old, and one set of duals is new. You're actually going to see wear on the inside. You're going to see more wear on the inside of the new tires because you put them at an angle, so they're going to increase the load. They're actually going to wear off slanted. And it seems crazy, but it actually happens. You wouldn't think that it would be a big deal, but it actually happens. And it doesn't happen in one day. It happens over, you know, many thousand miles. And if you're thinking that, you know, truck tires today, like Scott was saying, you know, you get into the light truck tires, you know, they're $250 or $300 a throw, you know. So at $300, that's $1,200 for the rear axle. $1,200 for the rear axle. You know, that's a dent in the old Capital One card. You know, so when you do that, the likelihood of you wanting to run those for as long as you possibly can is at the top of your priority list. So you want to make sure that they run out. So properly maintained tires, you know, maybe you can get 50, 60,000 miles out of them. Well, that's a pretty good haul. You'd much rather have that scenario versus saying, oh, I put some on and they wore out in 20,000 miles. Because now you're going to do it. You're going to buy those tires all over again. And although tires are easy to put on, they don't take a lot of work, but they are certainly expensive. And having to go through that $1,200 experience, or you put a set of duals on, so you only spend $600, but then they wear out really quick. Then you got to go put the other set on. Now you're swapping back and forth, and that can be highly expensive. You're chasing your tires back and forth, and it makes it very, very expensive for you to run. Also, Jerry and Scott were talking about alignment in the front. You know, alignment in the back is just as critical, even more so on trucks. You get rear suspension components that are worn, bushings that are wore out, alignments that occurs in a rear axle. Those duals will just scrape along the ground, and they look like a sawtooth, and they wear right out. And now you're wearing out four tires instead of just two. So, and they're really susceptible to that alignment. So alignment in the front is critical, as well as alignment in the back. Towing when you're
on
fifth wheel.
Adding a little caveat to that rear differentials. You can have a dually is basically a work vehicle. That's why you have a dually. You're carrying 2,500, 3,000 pounds in the back end of it off of a fifth wheel hitch or something like that. And you can actually bend the spindles on a one ton, no problem, towing a fifth wheel or a gooseneck trailer and hit a curb, drive up over a curb, which is not uncommon with a dualies. But the bend was so minute, I did not know it until the seal on the wheel started leaking. But it did it when I left to go to Flagstaff. I did not even catch it until I got ready to leave Flagstaff, the rodeo grounds, and come back to Tucson. Well, by then, the way I caught it was I heard a growl in the right rear. It had burnt the bearings out, and the end of that that housing. Yeah.
Ouch.
And that's when I had a tow bill that that's when Jim was talking last week. He'll tow you to the nearest repair center. I didn't want it to go to the nearest repair center. I wanted to go to Simmons 4x4 in Tucson. It did. I paid the ride. I was just outside of Flagstaff when that flatbed come and got me. I had a one-ton dually extended cab, I mean crew cab, with a cab over camper, a 10.5-foot cab over camper on it. They picked me up there, brought me back to Tucson, and then I took it in, and I turned it over to the insurance because they said, you have bent the spindle, which means the only way I can bend the spindle is I had to hit something. And I did. I remember hitting a curb. But I got out and looked. I was fine. You know, scrubbed the tire a little bit. No biggie. No, it was a biggie. And if you're carrying a 12,000-pound cab over camper that's fully loaded, and you're carrying a one-ton dually, and you hit a cab or hit a curb, you're going to have some expense, and you need to take a good look at that when you get done. When they do the alignment on this, that is the only way. When I got it back, the only way we could do, we use some stock car stuff that we use to measure wheels and angles and stuff, and found out that it was bent. It was bent. You know, I thought, you know, everybody saying, well, you must have had a bearing go bad. Yeah, if you put enough preload on the bearing and starve it for oil because the tolerances change, you're gonna spin it. But that was a very expensive lesson for me. One, I should have said, okay, I just hit a curb. I think what I will do, because it didn't happen when I was going to Flagstaff. It didn't even happen when I... Yeah, it did. Had the camper on it. And I remember hitting a curb and scraping the side of the tire. It bends it. You can't see it with a naked eye. I looked. I didn't see it. And I told you, I can line up anything within a quarter of an inch. However, trying to find a flat road around Tucson to set anything so you can see the tire relationship to the bed of the truck, especially when you got a cab over camper that weighs a ton, and it sets sideways. So, I mean, it's heavier on one side than it is on the other, so you got a different spring load rate. But, people, you can't find everything. Sometimes you have to go and say, okay, Jerry, you have this big machine that you can measure the ride height of this vehicle. Brian, at Automotive Specialist, you have this big machine that you can measure the ride height on these vehicles. Now, people, when you got a vehicle with 100,000 miles and you're measuring ride heights, you've got to take a lot of stuff in consideration. One, a coil springs, if it's a coil spring front end, the coil springs actually lose tension over a period. The 100,000 miles, you can just about guarantee, if you've got a motor in there, especially diesel or big block, your spring tension is not going to be as stout as it was when you rolled it off the showroom floor at 0 miles an hour. That thing sits under a load holding that 650 to 1,100-pound motor, diesel, and it will go down. It changes the way the vehicle's front suspension is, the geometry. If you're carrying a cab over camper on this big thing, the cab over camper loads the back of the truck. If you don't have like air shocks or air springs or added leaves or something to keep that load balanced toward the front, you're going to have problems with the rear springs. The rear springs means you drive down the road with a cab over on it, and it's almost like driving a boat. It's called a porpoise. And your front end is just wiggling all over the place. Well, and you think, oh, my front end's junk. Yeah. You better check the rear end, because that is a prime example of the rear springs or struts or whatever you've got for rear suspension is letting you down. And that normally happens around 100,000 miles, depending on what you do with it. If you buy one ton, again, if you buy one ton dually, you're normally pulling something.
Don't go to sleep, because if you're pulling it, you've got double the wear than if you're running empty. That's what I based it on, and that's what I proved over the years of having. I've been towing since I was a kid, and that's the way it works out. The tires, I'm going to tell you something. When you get rotating tires, we're talking about rotating tires. When you go in to rotate the tires on a diesel, that is a separate little ball game that you're going to play. So what you want to do is make sure that the people that are rotating those tires know exactly what to do with those diesel tires when you're rotating them. Because you're talking about getting bumps, and they have to be balanced when you pull them off. If you're going to rotate your tires, rotate and balance. Rotate and balance. Put that in there. I want them rotated and balanced. Rotated and balanced. Because it'll change when you change it from the front to the rear. You know. And some people say, oh, well, you're supposed to cross when you do the radials. I don't cross my radials. I cross my radials, that darn thing shakes. I go from front to rear on a radial tire. And they've made the radials a lot better than they used to. And I will admit, they don't do it as often. But it seems like the quality of tire that you buy and the way they're rotated also run. I mean, everything's a player. So just because you've been doing it like front to rear forever, don't mean that you're going to get away with it. Okay? So that's when you go to tire specialist, or you go into Simmons that's had their butt kicked on these things more than one time. So, but anyway, hey, Jim, we're out of time. Sir, summary. Can you explain that?
We're out of time again.
Yeah. Simmons is still looking for two. He's looking for a technician and a machine shop helper back in drive shaft division. Also, hopefully all the tickets are gone. So until next week, God bless, and we'll talk to you. Thanks, Jim, for being with me today, buddy. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank
bye-bye.
You. Thanks, Scott from Parker Automotive. Have a great weekend, folks.
All right, buddy.